Welcome back into the Irish NFL Show in partnership with USA Sports. Check out their website for 25% off using the code NFLIE. Delighted to be back with a former guest of the show, Richard Graves from RDG Media. Richard, very welcome to the show.
Yeah, great to be back on. I know it's, 2 months just under since the Super Bowl passed and we officially went into the NFL's off-season, but a lot's happened since then. Like I say, the NFL never sleeps. It's a 365-day-a-year operation now and plenty to talk about.
Yeah, it's been a very busy period between combine and free agency and obviously the league meetings. And I am going to come to the league meetings in a couple of minutes, but I wanted to just jump in and start off just reflecting on the season that was and your Dallas Cowboys. Me and you spoke in Tottenham last October, pre-Giants Packers game, and if you probably remember now that it's very difficult to sit in the media area when your own team is playing. And I think by the end of the game, I wasn't probably perceived as a media person, but definitely a Giants person. Both teams, interesting seasons. Both teams knocked out in the divisional rounds. Our expectations were very different. So upon reflection, great season. First year under a new head coach and GM. For the Cowboys, another frustrating end to a season in which a game against the 49ers, I felt they really, should have won. There was certainly a lot of opportunities there. Their defense was really, really good on the day, but unfortunately just couldn't get it done. I mean, when you sit back and think back to the season, Kellen Moore's moved on to the Chargers. Like, how do you see things right now in Dallas?
I think we've got a big year ahead for Mike McCarthy as head coach in particular, because everything's been put in place now for two people. One, Mike McCarthy, who after this coming season will be entering the final year of his contract. So whether he gets extended or not could well depend on how the Cowboys go in the year ahead. Equally now, Zeke Elliott's gone from the Cowboys. This is Dak Prescott's team. The one knock on him has been that to this point, he doesn't really appear to have made the players around him better. He's certainly been a serviceable quarterback, top 12 quarterback in the NFL for me. But can he take the team on his shoulders and take them to that next stage? Well, that's what we're going to find out over the coming season. As regards the postseason, no question. The Giants far exceeded expectations at the outset. Getting to the divisional round in Brian Daboll's first year in charge as head coach was a massive upturn for them and certainly gives them a platform on which now to build. And I think as a result, you look at that NFC East division in its entirety, and even the Washington Commanders, I think, are a better team now all round. It's a much more competitive division than it was even 2 years ago. As for the Cowboys, the playoffs were the least that were expected this coming year. A lot of talk preseason that they had to make it to the championship. They never made it there. But I will say this, having lost the same opponents in the playoffs as they did the previous year in the San Francisco 49ers, I think there's a very different feel about the Cowboys this offseason to what it was 12 months ago. There really was a feeling that the 49ers toyed with their food a little bit when they won in Dallas in the wild card round. And he sort of looks into where did Dallas go really here? They need help on defense. They need help on offense, probably special teams as well. Well, 12 months on, I don't think anybody can argue that although they lost in the division round to the 49ers, there was very much more semblance of it being a championship winning defense that they had. Micah Parsons stacking seasons back to back was a huge upturn as well. Donovan Wilson, a revelation along with Jayron Kearse at safety, a position that's been often neglected by the Cowboys. And I think to that end, managing to keep Donovan Wilson, who was heading into free agency by giving him a three-year deal, is another big tick for the Cowboys. Equally on offense, they were improvements without question that needed making. Zeke Elliott's best days were behind him. It was a big move, I think, to cut ties with him and let him go and venture into free agency. Tony Pollard, given the franchise tag, coming back from injury, will be interested to see how he goes now as the lead running back in Dallas this coming year. But they probably need help on the interior offensive line. I think if you're looking towards the draft, they brought back Jonathan Hankins to help the defensive line and solidify that a little bit as well. And they've made some good trades, I think. They've sort of flown under the radar, flipping a fifth-round compensatory pick to the Indianapolis Colts for Stephon Gilmore to go opposite Trayvon Diggs, I think, is a good move. And then equally, you've given the Cowboys offense a deep threat that can extend the field now in acquiring Brandon Cooks with a trade for the Houston Texans as well. And the Texans will eat some of his salary in the process of that deal. So good moves in the offseason. They haven't done anything to hurt the team there in Dallas. It's now a big draft that lies ahead in a month or so's time.
Yeah, I spoke to John Machado from The Athletic a few weeks ago. He covers the Cowboys, and he said don't expect any major moves in free agency, but do expect a number of trades. And it's kind of, as you said, it touched on there, it's kind of played out that way. It kind of looks to me as those two particular trades in particular, Stephen Gilmore, real experienced, you know, player in the league, been around a number of teams, really strong when he was with the Patriots. And Brandon Cooks, as you said, a great deep threat. He's been, I think he's setting records now in terms of how many teams he's been traded to during the league. But they really do kind of strike me as players that the Cowboys recognize we're not far off the mark here. And if we just get the right players in with the experience, they could really push the team on.
Oh, without doubt, they are four now players. So Dallas feel that they're close. But what they've also done is, look, you look at the draft, and Dallas have been one of the most successful teams in the NFL draft over the last decade or so. Certainly rounds one through to four. You go rounds five, six, seven, and there's a real fall off here in the talent acquisition there and players selected that have actually made an impact on the team. Deron Bland, the cornerback, rookie last season, fifth round pick, is an exception to that really for Dallas over the last 10 years. So I think what they've done this time around is looked and said, look, we're really not hitting very often in the draft rounds five through to seven. So we've got fifth round picks here. One's our own, one's a compensatory one. What can we do in terms of getting experienced, talented veterans that can help this team now? Stephon Gilmore was one of the top 12 cornerbacks in the NFL for me last season. Still, he'll be 33 going into the coming season. I think he can certainly solidify and help that defensive secondary for Dallas. And then you saw last season an open acknowledgement that they really didn't have a deep play threat on offense. That was proven by bringing in T.Y. Hilton through December and into the postseason. Funnily enough, just before the trade deadline, they did try to make something happen with Houston to try and get Brandon Cooks. It didn't happen on that occasion. Well, now they've brought him in the offseason. He's got a full offseason to work with Dak Prescott and the rest of this receiving core. Again, it signals intent from Dallas in a division that's getting more competitive by the day. And I think you've only got to look back to what the Philadelphia Eagles did last offseason, how aggressive they were in free agency and making moves and how that paid off. I think Dallas have looked across at their NFC East rivals and thought, well, maybe neglecting free agency and going solely through the draft isn't entirely the answer. It takes a mixture of both, and that appears to have been what they've done, certainly through March.
Yeah, I recall when you were on our live show in London and the season before last, you said that Diggs was a standout player as a cornerback, but on the other side was really concerning. I think they were kind of aligning with two different rookies at the time. So it's, you know, to put Gilmore on the opposite side of Diggs is a real, for me, it's a real strong signal that they really want to solidify the secondary. I just want to jump back into normal news because obviously the league meetings have taken place this week, and I think it's been marred, unfortunately, by the situation around flexing of the schedule. I suppose this is probably more political type of conversation in terms of what people's views are. But like, obviously, on this side of the world, we see what the Premiership do, you know, in terms of maybe 6 or 7 weeks out, they adjust the games for maybe 6 weeks. And at the start of the season, when the fixtures come out in June, they give you kind of a little bit of a calendar and they kind of give you an update in terms of when to expect changes to be made. And this week, we've seen Roger Goodell come out with this kind of, I suppose it's going to be tabled again next month. We've seen John Mara and other owners kind of come out. I don't think anybody's come out as strongly as John Mara has, but essentially saying, within 15 days, 2 weeks, we can reschedule a game from a Sunday to a Thursday. And I appreciate a lot of Americans are focused on it, but from this side of the world, there's quite a significant amount of people that travel over to watch games, in particular on the East Coast, you know, because it's so easy these days to fly direct, whether it's through Dublin, through London and Manchester and so on, to go to Patriots, Jets, Giants, whatever particular game they want to go. And to be in a position where you could spend thousands on flights, tickets, accommodation, only for a game to be moved back, you know, 2 weeks prior, 2 weeks prior. Like, it's really thoughtless in my opinion. And I know Roger Goodell has come out with, we want to have the best product on the field in terms of what people are watching at home. But like, there seems to be a complete disconnect in terms of when the fans are going to the game.
Well, as always, there's two sides to every story, isn't there? And I think from the NFL's perspective, there's definitely a big element of trying to make money here. And I think by general consensus, the figures for Thursday Night Football in Amazon's first season, holding the rights to that time slot, haven't been exactly what was expected. Part of that without doubt, is because the luck of the draw, and they got some bad games, let's be honest. Certainly games involving Denver that were low scoring weren't exactly thrillers. So they're unsurprisingly, they're quite keen to be able to have the option to flex games so they can perhaps get better games, more attractive, more viewers, upgo the ratings. Certainly we've seen in previous years ESPN lobbying for that. It's happened for ESPN. You mentioned John Mara, the owner of the New York Giants. Unambiguous. I do not like this idea. I am dead set against it. And I think it's quite interesting that you've got the owners of the 32 franchises together this past week, and they couldn't get enough of a consensus to pass the motion. So I think without doubt, when they get together again in May, this is something that's going to be revisited. I think it's not just about international fans traveling that's a problem. I think if you're an American fan, quite often, if you live on the East Coast or West Coast, you'll design a whole trip around going to see the team play, taking the sights and sounds. It might be a long weekend, even if you're somebody going to Vegas, say, fly out Friday, come back Monday. Well, if your game gets flexed less than 2 weeks' notice to Thursday night, you're missing that game. So it's about a home market in terms of fans, as well as an international market. I think clearly there are enough owners that have significant concerns about the impact this may have on the game and reputation for it not to be passed this month. I would not be surprised if we see some sort of compromise when the owners get together in May. Look for something, for example, like one game in the final 2 weeks will be open to Amazon to flex, just so that they can have a small portion of the pie. As I understand at the moment, they were talking about the last five, was it maybe 6 weeks of the regular season to look at Amazon to flex. I think they might look at having just one week where they can flex. So they give Amazon something, but they don't significantly detract from the products they're putting on the field for the fans that are traveling as well. It's a contentious one, without doubt. We've heard, like say, John Mara especially, it causes passions to be raised fairly high in this. So there's an awareness of it. It'll be very interesting to keep an eye on this and see how it pans out. As I say, I think May could be the time when the owners get together and we hear about this again.
Yeah, we'll jump back into the football aspect and Lamar Jackson this week. I mean, it feels like it's a long ongoing saga, dating back to quite some time as opposed to just this offseason. But Monday was a kind of a very strategic move, in my opinion, from the Lamar. You know, it clearly was orchestrated to put out the tweet at the time in which Harbaugh was sitting down to do his media obligations at the league meetings, and he seemed to be caught off guard by what had just gone out, which was a bit off-putting, in my opinion, to do that, because at the end of the day, the relationship still needs to be there. You know, there still is a likelihood that he will return to the Ravens if he doesn't get the trade in which he wishes for. I mean, I'm not going to say how do you see this playing out, because generally I don't think anybody really knows, but are you surprised that the Ravens and Lamar haven't got to a stage where there's a comfort there, that there is a contract that suits both parties? Or do you really put it down to the fact that there's no agent in between and it's making for a difficult relationship between both parties?
I think that's massive. For all the stick that agents often get, predominantly from us in the media, it must be said, they have a role to play, and there's a reason that they get a significant portion of any agreement that's made. It's because they're good at their jobs, they know the ins and outs of the games, and they're able to get deals done. What we're seeing here with Lamar Jackson, you saw it when he was drafted. If he wasn't the last first-round rookie to sign, he was one of the last in representing himself. And this is the irony, because he represents himself and is very clearly doesn't want an agent. Yet, in my opinion, he is being advised at this point. You mentioned the timing of the tweet on Monday. I don't think that just happens by chance. What the problem you've got here is that the Ravens are dug in now to their position. Lamar's dug in to his. And my question mark about Lamar Jackson all along, I've met him in person. He's a top-class guy face-to-face. He's a former NFL MVP, but he's not the most accurate passer in the NFL. And I know some Ravens fans get quite annoyed when I say that. It's a fact. He's a dynamic playmaker. He can make plays with his legs. That is not going to hold up over any extended period of time in the National Football League. And we have seen that over the last 2 years with Lamar Jackson. The last two seasons, in December, he's hardly played a snap, let alone a game, because he's been injured. And if you keep taking hits in the NFL, you are going to get injured. So do you really want to assign $230, $240 million guaranteed, which seemingly is what Lamar Jackson is looking for, or something at least comparable to what Deshaun Watson got from the Cleveland Browns over a 5, 6, 7 year period, when the last 2 years would suggest you can't bank on your quarterback being on the field all the time in games where you need him the most? Do you want to do that? Unsurprisingly, the Baltimore Ravens don't want to assign that amount of money, commit themselves that extensively to one player when they don't have all the answers right now. Equally, Lamar Jackson seems to think he can get that from somewhere. I think what we're going to see, because there's been no open interest to this point in the NFL for Lamar Jackson's services. Remember, he's on that non-exclusive tag. He can negotiate a deal with any team right now. The Ravens would have the opportunity to match it. I think it's going to be after the draft that we see something, if we see anything indeed at all, happen, when the teams that are in need of a quarterback take their chances and then see how the land lies. And if there's a team that still feels that they need to improve on that position and they haven't been able to do it through the NFL draft, then we might see some negotiating with Lamar Jackson. Even then, I think if a team did, they would advise him not to sign that non-exclusive franchise tag, because if they do and they agree a deal and the Ravens don't match it, then they're on the hook for their next two first round picks. I don't think there's a team in the NFL right now that wants to give away their next two first round picks for Lamar Jackson. So at that point, they'd probably try and negotiate a trade with the Baltimore Ravens. It's certainly got some time to run, but I think the longer it runs, the less likely it is we see Lamar Jackson under center for the Ravens going forward, which would be a shame, because, you know, they've pretty much built their offense around Lamar Jackson. They've shown plenty of commitment to him, maybe not in financial terms, but look at Josh Allen, at the Buffalo Bills, same draft class as Lamar Jackson. He signed his first deal 2 years ago. He's getting paid handsomely right now. And in the next 12 months or so, he's likely to get a second deal. Lamar Jackson's not out of his rookie contract yet.
Yeah, he has an opportunity to double down, essentially, if he comes back and has a really productive career, 3 or 4 years that he'll be in a position come 28, 29 years of age, then to essentially go and get another slice of the pie. You touched on the reason as to why teams probably aren't pursuing him at this moment in time, whether it's they want to hold on to this first year. This, obviously, you touched on there, they have to give away 2 first-round picks. And I have read a couple of story notes that say teams are interested. They just want to wait till after the draft because they'd rather give away next year's pick as opposed to this year, where they know exactly where they're at. They know exactly what players will be in the ballpark in terms of what they can get this year based on their position in the first round. And then there's another story, when I only picked up on this yesterday, whoever picks him up for the week, and I don't know how this will play out, but for the week in which he's essentially gives the Ravens the opportunity to match, that contract is on the books of that team. So it could be on the books. It means they can't do anything within that week. I know it's a short period in the NFL world, but then they can't do anything whilst they wait for the Ravens to make a decision. So the contract is the Sean Watson contract last year. I remember Ravens owner coming out at the time going, this was really, really kind of upset us in particular, because now we're in a position where there's no win with us.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Brian. I think there's a lot of owners in the NFL and certain general managers that are pretty upset with the Cleveland Browns, because as years go on, traditionally it was believed that the next contract that was paid to a quarterback would set the market. The contract offered to Deshaun Watson and ultimately given to him as signed by the Cleveland Browns is such an outlier that it isn't setting the market. And I think that's an element of what we're seeing here with the Baltimore Ravens as well. I cannot believe at some point in negotiations, they haven't offered him a significant, and by significant, I mean in excess of $100 million in guaranteed money. But Lamar Jackson has looked at it and said, well, no. I'm a former NFL MVP. What has Deshaun Watson ever done? I understand why Lamar Jackson values himself as high, if not higher than Deshaun Watson. But the problem you've got is the contract given to Deshaun Watson is that outrageous that NFL teams are looking at it now, in my opinion at least, and saying, no, that is not a market sector. That is an outlier. We're going to look more realistically. You know, you look at somebody like Patrick Mahomes and the deal he signed, 10 years, just shy of $500 million. Well, that only works out at $50 million a year. Deshaun Watson's get to be completely guaranteed, which again, Patrick Mahomes wasn't completely guaranteed, it's a problem for the NFL right now. I think when this gets resolved with Lamar Jackson, we might see it all settle down. Make no mistake, the salaries and contracts are still going to keep rising for NFL quarterbacks. They're just not going to shoot up in line with Deshaun Watson's quite yet.
Yeah, and the salary cap is only going to increase year on year. I just want to close out with this kind of ironic comment from Arthur Blank this week of the Falcons, who said they're not pursuing Lamar Jackson because they looked at the body of work, and he touched on it earlier. He didn't play for large parts of second parts of the season, but yet only for 12 months removed from when he was willing to sign Deshaun Watson, knowing that he was going to be banned effectively for the bones of one entirety of a season. So I found that comment a bit strange. Another saga, and again, I don't even know how we're going down this road, but I will throw it out there. Aaron Rodgers, I was listening to New York Sports yesterday, White Fan Radio, and one of the hosts said that on paper, when Aaron Rodgers comes in, the Jets are going to have the best team in the league on paper. Now, whether that's New York for you, but whether that, I suppose, transpires to be what we see on the field, like it feels like a bit of a... if you recall the Philadelphia Eagles back in the day, where they just tried to build a team of stars, and that team will effectively be put together, and Chip Kelly will be able to manage this team, and it never really orchestrated and worked out very well. And I kind of get that sense to be a little bit of a disappointment in with the Jets fans if they don't see what they expect, because Lazard has come in, there's talk about Odell Beckham coming in, they've already got some really fruitful players on offense. Like last year, the second half of the season was derailed to me personally by the fact that they didn't really have a solid quarterback. I mean, do you see this team with Rodgers coming in as a really up there challenge with the likes of the Bills, Bengals, and the Chiefs for the AFC?
Well, I smile somewhat when you mention the Philadelphia Eagles of years gone by and Vince Young in preseason declaring that they were the team. And I think they finished that season with a losing record, unless I'm mistaken. It all went south pretty quickly for them and for Chip Kelly. I think it's a gamble for the New York Jets. There's no question about the talent Aaron Rodgers has had over the years. We're only a season removed from him being back-to-back named as NFL MVP. However, of a concern to me would be what we saw last season. Now, you can talk to me about not having a top-notch receiving core. You can talk to me about injuries and various other problems that might have been going on in Green Bay. But Aaron Rodgers wasn't lighting the place up in Green Bay last year, and he wasn't the Aaron Rodgers that we're used to seeing. You look at the New York Jets. Their defense, I think, is already made to be challenging for divisional honors and making them, at the very least, very competitive. The problem came on offense last year. You quite rightly highlight the issues they had at quarterback. Zach Wilson hasn't worked out to this point. Would it help him being an understudy to Aaron Rodgers? I think unquestionably. How can it not? Any time you get the opportunity to work with somebody who's achieved what Aaron Rodgers has in the game, that has the knowledge that Aaron Rodgers has in the game, can only help a young quarterback. Does it help the New York Jets right here, right now? Well, if the 2020 or 2021 Aaron Rodgers shows up in New Jersey, without doubt, yes, it does. What I find interesting is you mentioned Alan Lazard there. Well, he was part of the receiving core last year in Green Bay that Aaron Rodgers didn't seem overly happy with, and yet now he wants him in New York. Odell Beckham, fine, he went to the LA Rams and got a Super Bowl ring. But the general consensus around him is that if he isn't getting what he wants, then he can become a distraction in the locker room. Well, we've already seen that Aaron Rodgers in himself can become something of a distraction over the last several years in Green Bay. What Robert Saleh is trying to engineer in New York is a kindred spirit, a team mentality. He's got that right now on defense. You bring in all these egos all at the same time on offense. Does it work? I think we've probably seen as many occasions when it doesn't, and it becomes fractious very quickly if results start not going your way, as the chances are that it would. It would give people like me and you tons of pages to write about, plenty to talk about on shows like this. It would be heaven sent. However, what the gangrene fans want are victories. They have been starved of success. It's over a decade since a Mark Sanchez-led New York Jets team got to the AFC Championship game and came up Sure, they want to see their team competitive again. They got a taste of it, glimpse of it last year. Remember, midway point of the season, they had a winning record and it fell away. The hopes have been raised. I understand why. I think this has got a long way to run. The fact that a deal hasn't been agreed already yet between the New York Jets and the Green Bay Packers is an issue. Everybody knows Aaron Rodgers wants to go to the Jets. The Jets want Aaron Rodgers, and the Green Bay Packers are planning to move on with Jordan Love. The fact that they can't get a deal done, again, is an issue because it's a distraction. And distractions are not what the New York Jets need.
Well, if the media in Wisconsin are tough, I can only imagine what he's going to be up against if they have a bad start to the season in New York, because the noise will be out fairly quickly. Last year, the Broncos were the team that everybody was declaring as the team for prime time, and imagine the Jets come scheduled midway. I think we'll see there on quite a lot of games. One final thought on this. I don't know if you had the opportunity to see Gutekunst, the GM of the Packers, comments this week, and he was very kind of deliberate in how he approached his interview, but he was very, I suppose he was quite the opposite to Aaron Rodgers. It says everything Aaron Rodgers had said on Pat McAfee, he kind of countered with, no, that's not accurate because we did X, we did Y. And essentially trying to throw it back on Aaron Rodgers to basically say, what you're putting out there in the general general media is inaccurate. And it seems to me like he's parking the bus here. They know they've got their quarterback, like the Jordan Love. So the time clock isn't for them. It's for the Jets, in my opinion.
Absolutely right. It doesn't matter to them how long it takes for Aaron Rodgers to move on, because like you say, they're planning to go forward with Jordan Love. And even the worst case scenario that this deal falls through, well, you've got Aaron Rodgers for another year. There are worse problems to have for sure. I found it quite interesting reading his comments, though. It sounded very rational, if I'm being honest. At some point, the organization comes first. Hadn't heard anything from Aaron Rodgers. There was no signal of intent one way or the other. He'd gone away on his solitary confinement camp. They were making plans and sounding out different options. Well, if you're a good general manager, you make sure that you're aware of every option on the table, because that's how you make your organization better. I sat down and watched Aaron Rodgers live on the Pat McAfee show give his reasonings. I've got to be honest, some of it I believed, some of it I thought, well, you're slanting to suit your argument here. That didn't come as a surprise. From Green Bay's point of view, like you say, they hold all the cards. I don't think there's any problem with what he said, and I think the Packers hold the strong hand here.
I'll just close out with this final question. I know it's very early in the offseason. Look, we haven't even got through the draft yet, but having looked at what the 49ers did in free agency, in particular going after players that essentially cost them a Super Bowl place, and bringing in Javon Hargrave from the Eagles, and the number of players in which the Eagles have lost. I mean, I know there's still a question mark whether it's Trey Lance, Brock Purdy, but have the 49ers kind of leapfrogged the Eagles in terms of being the number one team in the NFC? Or, you know, if you're looking now in terms of who you believe will be back to really challenging to be in the Super Bowl next year?
Well, if you believe that defense wins championships, I think without a doubt the Niners have leapfrogged the Eagles. The problem is that you've got an untested, now third-year quarterback in Trey Lance coming off a significant injury, and he wasn't impressive in the short game time that we've seen so far in the NFL. And you've got a second-year quarterback in Brock Purdy, who lit up the NFL for the final third of last season, but he's coming off a significant injury. There's no guarantee that he's going to be 100% ready for September anyway, and that's despite John Lynch saying, well, if we're starting tomorrow, it would be Brock Purdy's job as a starter. The problem is they don't know quite yet. Without question, the addition of Javon Hargrave bolsters what was already a hugely impressive defensive front for the San Francisco 49ers and only makes them stronger. On the other side of the coin, and I said this following the Super Bowl defeat in Arizona, I really felt the time was now for the Philadelphia Eagles on a couple of fronts. One, you've got a quarterback on a rookie deal. You are going to have to pay Jalen Hurts. Now, he has certainly done more than enough to warrant a big contract when the Eagles do decide to negotiate with him. Secondly, we've already touched upon, they were aggressive in the offseason last year, both through free agency and acquisitions. And we've seen a couple of players already move on. Gardner Johnson, for one, was a revelation, moving to safety, rather, for the Eagles last year. Well, he's gone now. They did manage to keep hold their two cornerbacks. Darius Slay was rumored to be on his way out inside a few hours. That had been flipped to renegotiated contracts. That's a bonus. Losing Hargrave at the heart of that defensive line is a problem. They certainly need to find a replacement for him. And you brought back Fletcher Cox again on another one-year deal. Experienced veteran. He's been a very good player over the years, but you do wonder just how long you can keep playing at that level, because the body gets tired and old, takes knocks, and it becomes harder the older you get to recover from those knocks. So I think the Niners are certainly better in terms of a team. They need to sort out their quarterback position. If they can do that, then they would be my favorites as we sit here talking right now to go to the Super Bowl from the NFC. But the Eagles have done a fairly good job to this point. They've got the core of a young, good team. They'll be competitive again, make no mistake about that.
The alarm clock is going off in this podcast because my dog is barking in the background. Richard, as always, it's been a pleasure to have you on. We didn't even get into a proper AFC conversation. Maybe we'll get you back on after the draft and we can run through all the selections and talk about the AFC. Really appreciate your time today.
No, love being on every time, Brian. Definitely would like to come back and talk AFC, and I'm sure there'll be more than one talking point to come out of the NFL draft as well. There's a few months to go before we actually see football on the pitch or on the field. Again, but for sure, there'll be no shortage of talking points. Thanks as always.
Thanks, Richard.